Hello and welcome to the Friday Reporter podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Camuso-Miller. I'm a public affairs professional in Washington, D.C., and I interview members of the media about their background, about how they got into journalism, and lots of other topics. The Friday Reporter is a PR Daily podcast. Check out PR Daily for ideas, inspiration, and trends on all things public affairs, and to find the Friday Reporter podcast. Thanks so much for joining me for another episode of the Friday Reporter podcast. This week's guest is a White House reporter joining me from the Wall Street Journal, Tarini Party. Thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks for having me, Lisa. This will be fun.
So tell me, Tarini, we've known each other since you were at Politico, and I know that you've had a couple of stops since you and I have worked together recently. So tell me, and you've been busy, like you covered the 2020 election. I mean, there's been a lot going on. Talk to me a little bit, though, before we get into that. How did you get into journalism?
Yeah, so I grew up in New Delhi and in North Carolina, and my family always got a lot of newspapers when I was growing up, and my grandfather used to live with us when I was a child, and he always read the newspaper every morning, and he would just spread them all out around himself, and I would see that every morning, and for some reason thought it would be cool to have someone like my grandfather who I, you know, loved and really enjoyed hanging out with. I thought it'd be cool if someone like him was reading those words. So I, for some reason, decided that that's what I wanted to do. And I started saying that at a very young age. So
wow.
I'm glad I'm still doing this.
Yeah, sure.
Years later.
So did you go to school for journalism? So you must have. You must have followed that path like all the way through to get you to Washington.
I did. I went to UNC Chapel Hill, and I worked at the college paper there called the Daily Tar Heel, a great student newspaper. And I got a degree in journalism and political science. And then I moved to D.C. in 2012, where I started as an intern at Politico and then got hired there. So that was my first job and where I met you. And I started out, doing reporting on lobbying and campaign finance, and also at the time, the 2012 election. Wow, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, no kidding. We've aged 1,000 years since then. but that too, and I've said it before because I've had colleagues of yours who are even still at Politico. What a tremendous training ground! I mean, no publication in town has a better reputation for really just hardworking, chasing after leads and getting the news first, and also really started that trend for just about every vertical. To have a newsletter that would get you up early in the morning and get you reporting out about what the news of the day is. And so it's just such a great place for you to have started, because you certainly, you learned it all there and then have refined it into this tremendous career that you have today. Talk to me a little bit about, you've been at the Wall Street Journal now for a little bit of time, but talk to me a little bit about how the beat that you're on today has evolved, because did it start when you were on the 2020 campaign?
Yeah. Politico was an amazing learning ground. Learned how to do policy, politics, basically everything in the 3.5 years that I was there. I was at BuzzFeed News after, where I did a little bit more intuitive politics, Congress. Just, it was a small bureau in DC, so it was also like Politico in the way that I really just got to learn a bunch of different things all at once.
Yeah.
And then that all prepared me for the Wall Street Journal, which is obviously much more sort of institutionalized than Politico and BuzzFeed, which were sort of these startup places.
Sure.
When I was there. And so I started out covering the 2020 campaign, where I, covered the Democratic primary, sort of focused on Kamala Harris at first, did some stories on other candidates as well, but very much focused on Kamala Harris at first. And then when she dropped out, I moved on to Mike Bloomberg, who was a very fun candidate to cover for the Wall Street Journal,
because
of our readers and our sort of coverage areas. It was an interesting campaign to cover. And then after the primary, I helped cover Biden's campaign. And then that sort of led to my beat now, which is covering the White House, but also focusing on the vice president's office and certain policy issues like immigration and COVID. Everyone's sort of doing COVID, but it's still a big policy area for us to cover. We try to look at the White House beat as very much, focused on sort of substantive policy stuff, not as much as sort of the palace intrigue kind of White House reporting that, everyone did or in the Trump administration for sure.
No kidding. No kidding. Yeah. It was very different White House to cover for sure.
We're in sort of a different time now. And that's how we're sort of covering the White House beat at the moment.
Talk to me a little bit about, because the 2020 election was so different, because there was not, not as much travel, not as much event coverage. There was a lot of a different feel. How did it look for you? What kinds of things were you traveling a little bit? How did that work for you? Because it was the first of what feels like 1,000 years of COVID. But how did that look for you for coverage?
Yeah, it really does feel like it was 1,000 years ago, but it went from just being on, just on the go and traveling nonstop. Like I said, I was covering Mike Bloomberg's campaign at that point in the primary in sort of February, March. And he was doing what felt like a million stops a day.
Plane
that he was using. And so we were, I think, doing at least four states or more sometimes in a day. And so, from doing that, and then he had his Super Tuesday primary night in West Palm Beach. And that was, sort of the last travel night for me for a while, because the following day he dropped out. I came back to DC. And then I was in the office, and there was discussion about maybe the offices are going to close and we don't know what this virus is.
Oh, I see.
I remember that vividly. And then that week, of course, basically everything shut down and we were grounded really from going anywhere, as everyone else was. And so it became a very weird campaign to cover, just, trying to do as much as we could from the phone. Biden wasn't doing a lot of events. Eventually that opened up some, and I went out with Harris, with Biden, but they were still, before November, doing a lot of sort of the drive-in type campaigning, where people were driving their cars into a parking lot at a university or something like that. So it definitely wasn't the same, and was a very challenging campaign to cover. My favorite thing about covering campaigns is talking to people, talking to voters. I was standing outside grocery stores trying to talk to people, and I was masked up and everything, but of course, people were, I don't blame them for not talking to reporters to begin with, but especially in a pandemic, it's a big ask.
And it was so early, because people were so, now we've kind of gotten into the rhythm and we know a little bit more about what we can and can't do, but that was so early on that I can't imagine how difficult that must have been.
It really was. And so I'm glad we're, obviously we're still in a pandemic and it's very hard, but I'm glad we've sort of moved on from that stage and can have at least a little bit of our lives back and sort of return to somewhat normal, maybe this midterm election.
Boy, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. It was interesting though, to think about, you must have had whiplash though. So in that March of 2020, after traveling and four states in a day and doing all these things, and all of a sudden, full stop, you're going nowhere. That must have been quite an adjustment. I cannot even imagine.
Yeah, I was, at the time we were in a one bedroom apartment in Adams Morgan. My husband is also a reporter. So we were, on our phones in a one bedroom apartment, and that was not very fun.
No. Yeah. Everybody's learned to live in their space for sure.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it. So talk to me a little bit now. So you are covering the White House, but the White House still has restrictions in terms of the amount of reporters that are in the room and how that's working. Talk to me a little bit about what it looks like for you to cover the White House now. Are you traveling a little bit? Are you there for the daily briefing? What does that routine look like for you?
Yeah, so we're definitely, you know, still staffing the White House. We have sort of a rotation on our team, mm-hmm. Where we make sure someone's there most of the time, and you know, we make sure someone has the briefing seat. Or yesterday when Biden had, or I guess on Monday. Yeah, sorry, on Monday.
That's okay. Yeah, it's Groundhog Day. I get it.
had his joint presser, you know, the Wall Street Journal my colleague got a question, mm-hmm. During that. So we try to be there as much as possible, but of course there are restrictions. So, you know, usually it's just one of us in, and if we are going to be in the pool, we have to be tested. So we have to make sure to get to the White House on time for all the testing, and we wear K95 masks or N95 masks. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to be very careful, and especially during the last 2 months during this Omicron wave, it was a little scary because there were a lot of people who were getting infected. You know, at least we would get these emails. We obviously don't know how or where they got it, but people who were at the White House were testing positive. Yeah. In terms of reporters, and we work in, for anyone who's been in sort of the press area, it is very crowded.
Close quarters, yeah.
Yes. So they did go down to a smaller, you know, rotation for the briefing room for a little while. And now we're again back to normal. So it's just always an adjustment to go from, you know, being spread out more and then all of a sudden having everyone back into this packed room during COVID. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're doing what we can based on, you know, with all the restrictions and still trying to be safe.
Of course. But it adds a much, I mean, as big as an honor as it is, and it says so much about the work that you do, that you're in that space and covering the White House, but it adds another layer. I mean, it's already very difficult to get into the White House complex. It's already very difficult to do, you know, go through all of those steps that you need to go to, and then to add that too, that's just another challenge to your day. So I can't imagine that, you know, it's just harder. It makes everything a little bit harder to have to be considering all of those things, which we all understand are part of what has to happen. Tell me a little bit, Tarini, because I'm curious. The White House obviously covers lots of different, I mean, they're busy on so many different levels. How do you and your colleagues decide who's going to cover what? How does that sort of, do you have a team? You must have a team of folks that you work with. As you mentioned, you said there's a couple of you. How do you decide who's going to cover what aspect of what's happening during the week?
Yeah, so there are six of us on the team. And, you know, when the team was first formed, we sort of talked about what we were interested in terms of policy areas or issues that we had experience in or that we wanted to report on. Because, like I said, at the Wall Street Journal, the White House beat is still very sort of substantive policy. Mm-hmm. So I picked the VP's office because I had covered her during the Democratic primary, and also decided to help on immigration and COVID because those were issues I was interested in and had done a little bit of reporting on in the past. So we sort of decided which issue areas we were interested in and sort of split things up that way. But then we also have a rotation. So we usually have two people on every week and one person on every weekend. Okay. So we have this very elaborate calendar.
Yeah.
Where we come up with this rotation weeks in advance, which is actually great because that way the people who aren't sort of on duty for the week can focus on, you know, bigger stories, enterprise stories, their policy areas. And then, you know, the people who are on duty are the ones who are stuck staring at their phones a lot during the day or their laptop. They're not missing anything.
It helps for planning with life too, I would imagine too, being able to get away or being able to do something other than your job every day. You can plan a little bit ahead if you know what you're going to be working on that week.
Very much so. And then on weekends, you know, especially since the president likes to travel and go to Delaware, and, you know, we have to figure out how that works with our rotation. So it's always good to know what's coming sort of weeks in advance so we can prepare better.
Tell me a little bit, if you can, because I'm always curious about this from sort of a press, like from a PR person's perspective. And for those people who are listening from not inside of Washington, There's a pool of reporters, though, that cover the White House. And typically you can draw from information, not on big days, but on days where he's traveling. If he's headed to Delaware, there's always someone that's closer. How does that work these days? How is that set up?
Yeah, so there's a in-house pool and, an out-of-town travel pool that there are different seats on for, if you're a wire or if you're TV mm-hmm. or you're a print. So we sort of have our rotation based on the type of outlet, and the Wall Street Journal is also part of Dow Jones Newswires. Mm-hmm. So we actually always are an in-house pool. So anytime the president has, an event in the Oval or anywhere on the White House complex, we usually have to be there for that since we are part of in-house pool. And then when he travels, there's a print seat and what's called a WHCA seat, which is a smaller group of print news organizations. Mm-hmm. So we're part of both. So we have sort of these very complicated rotations that thankfully the WHCA keeps up with them for us and lets us know when we're up. So we don't have to pay too much attention in trying to figure out who's doing what,
right.
which that is doing what. But there is a very complex rotation that has been figured out, and it helps us, monitor the president's movements, mm-hmm. sort of be there wherever he is, or at least close by. So when he's in at home in Delaware, we're at a hotel nearby. So whenever he goes to church or makes any sort of movement, the pool then can follow him.
And they alert you. So it's a smaller group of journalists. Yeah. WHCA standing for White House Correspondents. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So he doesn't have a gaggle of 15 reporters that follow him when he goes to church or when he goes to get ice cream, or he's got a smaller group of folks that travel more closely that report back to folks like you who cover the White House to let you know kind of what the president's movements are.
Exactly. Yeah. We just email out alerts on movements and kind of what he says. Sometimes, we shout questions and he happens to come over and chat and answer some of them. So mm-hmm. if he makes news or whatever, we have to send that out immediately.
Yeah. Well, I've always known a little bit about that myself, but I always feel like that's a little part of that beat that some folks maybe don't know about or don't realize is happening. I can't imagine being a president or a vice president and having people follow me everywhere I go. But I do think that it's kind of also kind of a way for them to get to know the journalists that are covering them as well, in kind of a better and more collegial kind of way. Tarini, tell me though, you've covered obviously the vice president, and she's had some great days and some tough days, and she has a very hard job just like every vice president ever does. Is there a story that you've covered? Is there a news angle? Is there something you can think of that you're especially proud of over the course of the last couple of years that really stands out as something that is work that you were really pleased that you had been part of?
Yeah, I think there are some examples I can think of. I'm one of those reporters who gets excited and sort of obsessed with a story while I'm doing it, and then once that I publish it, I immediately forget about it. So in terms of recent examples, this White House has been difficult to cover in terms of really getting inside the room and figuring out what's going on behind the scenes. And so a story that my colleague Michelle Hackman and I did recently looked at the divisions inside the administration on immigration policy mm-hmm. that I think was very revealing in terms of the actions that they've taken so far, and kind of the broader debate between within the Democratic Party on immigration itself and how those sort of fissures are playing out within the administration. So I think that was revealing and interesting, I hope, for people to read. Mm-hmm. I also recently got a one-on-one interview with the vice president, where she made some interesting comments about the 2024 election and said that was something that she had not talked to the president about at all, which was, I thought, interesting.
I saw that coverage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are some of the more recent stories that I thought were interesting from this administration.
Yeah. I had talked to a couple weeks ago, I spoke with Noah Bierman from the LA Times, who also covers the vice president quite a bit. And he had shared that, you know, they had had so many different kinds of days, days where they were up, days where they were down, days where they were clarifying points that the president has made. The vice president job is very difficult. And so I can imagine that every day has to be, you know, there's always got to be something else that that is happening, especially because she is historic in her being female, in being diverse, and in all sort of the perspectives that she sort of sees this role in terms of the historical nature of it. So,
yeah, it's
please
been fascinating to cover her office. Just there's so much attention paid to her just for the historic reasons that you mentioned, and then also, of course, the political speculation about, you know, her future.
Right. And every day it's something different. I mean, just a couple weeks ago when they announced that there would be a Supreme Court vacancy, her name was coming up as a possible someone for, you know, whether or not that's real or not. It's that sort of Washington intrigue, if you will. I mean, you covered lobbying in K Street. I mean, every day somebody is agitating in this town to move or do or change or say something. But in her role, I imagine that that's got to be exhausting. I can't imagine, because there's always there's a lot more scrutiny, and there's a lot more on her and her office. So they are definitely busy.
Very much so.
Tell me a little bit, though, as we look forward, right? So we're going into midterms, which is going to be, it's going to be different. It's going to be different because maybe COVID and maybe not, but also because we have Democrats currently have a very small majority in the House and the Senate, and there's a lot of contested races. Will you yourself go out on the road? Will you do some of that as we look forward, or is it too soon to tell?
Yeah, I want to. You know, one thing that I've missed with obviously COVID is really getting out there and talking to people. So I'm trying to plan some travel now, actually, to get that going. But I know the president and vice president both have said that they plan to get out there and travel themselves. So I'm sure even from the White House team perspective, you know, we would want to be out there and see how they're doing on the campaign trail. But mostly, I think it's important to talk to voters, to see how, you know, they feel the administration is doing. I think that's whether or not, you know, I'm covering sort of the details of a district or a campaign. I think it's important to actually talk to people to see how they view the administration or Democrats right now as they try to keep their majorities.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be an interesting conversation, I think, because lots of people have lots of opinions, and it's going to be the kind of thing where I think that even the Republican Party, there's just so much happening. And it's going to be, I think, a year where that perspective, the perspective of the voter and the people that are not inside of Washington, I think is more relevant and more important than any other conversation we can be having at this point. So that I hope that that happens for you, and I hope you get out there. Tarini, as you prepare for your day, as you get up and you get smart for the morning and how you're going to cover whatever perspective inside the White House it is, Is there a journalist? Is there a column? Is there something that you do? Everybody has a different way to prepare for their morning. Are there must reads? Are there things that you wake up and say, I've got to check and see what's going on here before I move on with my day?
Yeah, I read most of the major morning newsletters. I got my start working at Politico, as we've talked about. Mm-hmm. So I have a long-standing subscription to Playbook and Huddle and all of those newsletters. So I tend to skim those. And then, you know, Twitter is, it's hard to stop scrolling on Twitter in the morning.
No kidding.
That's where I usually catch up on a lot of things. But, I read the Wall Street Journal, of course, and then skim the Times and the Post usually. So I actually try to do at least 30 minutes to an hour of just reading in the morning, just to catch up on everything.
I think that's so important. And it's what most people that are in our space, whether you're a journalist or you're a public affairs person, tends to do. But I'm always curious, like, you know, is there something, some folks tell me they have to read you know, one columnist or another, they feel like that's something that they have to read in the morning. But the newsletters, I think, and you having been there and know how that process comes together, those have really changed, I think, the game and the, they've speed up the way that we all get ready in the morning, because it gives you that great aggregation of news you need to check, news you need to see. There'll always be something we miss, and we'll catch it, you know, as we're going through our day. But that's just a good reminder that how important those newsletters, not just Politico, but, you know, all of them, because just about every publication now has them.
Yeah, I subscribe to way more newsletters than I can read in the morning.
I believe it.
They're all great. I just, it's just a matter of what I end up clicking on first, I think, and then how much more time I have left.
And having been a journalist who produced a newsletter, you also have a great appreciation for those who got up at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock or whatever, oh dark o'clock in the morning, to write those great newsletters. So I definitely try to consume as many as I can, but you're right, there's just too many to read sometimes.
Definitely. I know the blood, sweat, and tears that go into
no doubt. No doubt. So Tarini, as we get to the end of our conversation, I'm thrilled that you were with me. I'm so glad we got a chance to catch up. I'm curious, is there anyone that you can think of that might be a good future guest for the podcast?
So my friend Kevin Roblard at Huffington Post, I just saw him the other day. So he's the first person who popped into my mind for
Great.
This, but he's also, obviously, very interesting and a fun person to talk to, and knows a lot about, politics and, the White House. So yes, I think he would make for an interesting guest.
Terrific. Well, I'll tell Kevin that you nominated him, and, it's been a fun way. And as you well know, just like when any PR person comes to you, if they come and they say, well, Lisa recommended I touch base, you know that maybe that person isn't a kook. So it does help with the nomination process. It's certainly helped with me get as many guests as I have over the course of the last year. Tarini, it has been a real pleasure to catch up. I'm so glad you're doing well. And I hope that you get out there and get to talk to more folks in 2022.
Yeah, great to catch up. Thank you for having me.
And that's today's Friday Reporter podcast, a podcast in partnership with PR Daily, a tremendous and helpful guide for all things public relations. Find us there on their website and join us again for another episode soon. Thanks so much.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery, and I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.